and welcome back to another episode of Librarians with Lattes. I'm your host, Amanda Lau, Outreach and Marketing Librarian at the University Libraries here at UAlbany. Joining me today are our two returning guests, Emily Kilser, Scholarly Communications Librarian, and Jesus Alonso Regalado, Subject Librarian for History, Latin American Studies, and Romance Languages, as well as the Principal Coordinator for the project that we will be discussing today. Welcome back to you both. As is tradition on this show, I must start off by asking, what is everyone sipping on today?
I just have some water. I finished my tea and my coffee, so yeah.
And you, Jesus?
Yeah, same. A little bit of water.
A little bit of water. I have water as well, but I also do have a latte. It's not what I want it for a drink this morning. I want it hot chocolate, but Starbucks decided that I needed coffee, so that's what I have. All right. So for today's discussion, we'll be diving back into a conversation around open access as we learn more about the Lackley Project. So, Jesus, can you start off by telling us what is Lackley and a bit about the project's origin story?
Sure. Yes. Lackley is a repository of free online resources for Latin American, Caribbean, Latinx, and Iberian studies. It's like a central place in which an aggregation of data is kept and maintained in an organized way. Lackley is managed by the Latin American Northeast Libraries Network, LANE. It's a network of library professionals representing academic and research libraries, mainly in the Northeast of the United States. And Lackley is a regional affinity group with ties to the Seminar on the Acquisition of Latin American Library Materials, SALAM, which is the major organization nationally interested in Latin American studies. Lackley is an essential tool to find websites that provide access to a great variety of resources, such as audiovisual materials, books, data, ephemera, oral histories, periodicals, reference works, web archives, and more. This is not like Digital Public Library of America. Some people might be familiar with that project. That one goes directly to the digital items themselves. In our case, likely goes to the websites, to collections, but not to the digital item per se. Hopefully, I mean, in the future, that will be one of our goals. This international digital scholarship project aims at facilitating the discoverability and visibility of free online resources that cover history, social sciences, natural sciences, and humanities. And it serves as a useful tool for students, teaching faculty, librarians, and digital scholars of Latin American, Caribbean, Latinx, and Iberian studies. So basically supports teaching, learning, and research. And let me provide you a little bit of detail about how it benefits these different targeted groups. For undergraduate and graduate students, it allows them to explore a great source to find resources for their projects, research projects, et cetera. For faculty, it helps them to enhance their courses. That might be writing space or all these different learning management tools, so they can add some of the resources they find in Lackley. For librarians, it helps them with their resource consultations and develop subject guides. For digital scholars, Lackley will be able to fool them with scholarly projects and an increasing set of open data that they can reuse in digital scholarship projects. So basically anyone in the academic community around the world interested in these geographical regions, and including also, of course, US Latinos, Latinx, they can find quality resources that actually they are not very common in databases created by the Global North. That is often ignored by companies that are set in the Global North. So basically, I mean, Lackley is all about providing facilitated access to all these resources.
So Jesus, you know, you gave us some context of the project, which is really helpful. I was wondering if we could dive into some of the particulars, and for folks that might be interested in sort of understanding the project better or taking on, you know, sort of leaping into starting a similar sort of project in their own discipline. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the open licensing, the idea of data sharing. You spoke about, you know, that the data behind this repository is open, and sort of the effort that it took for you to create a shared vision for the project. Did it take negotiation for you to get there with the group? And if you could speak a little bit about the through line of open practices in this project and how the group came to consensus on it.
So yeah, Lackley was established during the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown. to provide emergency support for online teaching, learning, and research. As you can imagine, there was an increased demand for online resources at that moment. And a group of librarians of Lane, the organization that manages the project, came up with this idea. The idea that started everything was by Paloma Celis Carvajal, is a New York Public Library librarian, member of Lane, and she wanted to create a lib guide to meet teaching, learning, and research needs for Latin America, Caribbean, and all these different regional geographical areas during the COVID home confinement. So this was a project that started in Lane, and she wanted to create a lib guide. But as you guys know, LibGuides is a software that allows you to create guides, but doesn't work well for collaboration across institutions. So it's a proprietary product, and we thought, well, it might be better if we use something else. Interesting enough, we started with something that is not open access. We created our data in a Google Sheet. So why do we use Google? Why we went with Google? Well, we consider that that was a good option because it allowed us to collaborate and work together remotely, and everyone was familiarized with Google Sheets. If we go with some of these open source software, it would have involved some sort of like learning curve. With Google Sheets, and it was like the transition was very fast. Remember, this project was created during COVID. There was an emergency. There was a demand for online sources. We didn't have time to learn an open source software. We just wanted to get it started as soon as possible. So we went with it. We didn't want to use LibGuides because also, I mean, not only doesn't allow collaboration, but the LibGuides don't talk to each other. Like I can create a LibGuide here, another person can create a guide, I don't know, in Binghamton, but then you can link to another guide, but it's not like the content is fully integrated. And anyway, it's like different closed worlds, right? And we realized that many LibGuides, what they do is that they repeat the content over and over again. We didn't want to reinvent the wheel. We started with the Google Sheet. And then also we thought, who wants to consult these LibGuides that have lots of links in an static, it's like a static list of links, like, our users don't want that, and but I know a lot of librarians create these long lists. So we wanted to use, to come up with a tool to search and filter, because that's what users want to do. They want to search, and then they want to filter results. So that's another idea that we have. And later on, Emily, I can go more with the technicals with that, but Kim, focus on your question about open practices. Something that was an open practice from the very beginning was that we wanted that our data to be open to anyone so that it can be reused by everyone. So it's under an attribution, non-commercial, share alike Creative Commons license. I'm sure many of our people listening to this podcast, I mean, they're familiarized with this kind of licensing, Creative Commons license. And we wanted people to reuse the data for any other projects like digital scholarship projects, subject guides, you name it. So you can use your data for your own projects. And this was especially useful for digital scholars. Regarding, you had a question about if we had a shared vision for this project in terms of if the project involved a negotiation. So it was interesting, maybe because it was this sense of emergency that the negotiation was quick and was unanimous. So that wasn't an issue here. That wasn't an obstacle. So yeah, good question, Emily.
No, thank you, Jesus. Yeah, I think it's really interesting that the, you know, sort of the context surrounding the development of the project, how that helped inform the shape that you took and the path that you took it, you know, like the pragmatism of using Google Sheets, it makes sense. And yeah, it's really interesting. So a little more about specifics. I was wondering, how did you scope and identify the materials to collect? And can you speak a little bit about the collection criteria and quality of content in Lockly? And whether there was a review process or, you know, especially since it was a crowdsourced effort with, you know, folks from different institutions, if you could talk about what that looked like.
So we initially started our project with a list of resources created by the Center of Research Libraries that is in Chicago. So they have this list that it was useful to get it started. And we use different methods to collect materials. Like we relied and we still rely on the knowledge of and expertise of librarians, professors, the community to suggest materials to add. And we have a form that anyone can fill out to send suggestions. We also review previous projects that is basically static list, sometimes from LibGuides. There was a project created initially by UT Austin that is not current anymore, but it still is available. It's called LANIC. And we develop a set of guidelines that define our scope and criteria to select materials. So for example, like, we include in Lackley resources that cover Latin America, Caribbean, US, Latinx, and Iberian that include full content. So what do we mean by full content? It could be audio, it can be a video, it can be a visual, a photograph, it can be full text. So that's what we mean by full content. But we also include reference sources. So in those cases, if it's an encyclopedia, the website has to include all the entries in full text. And we encourage the inclusion of online free resources outside of the United States. They will also consider resources that include very valuable material, but maybe not the whole website. It's fully online. It has partial online. A good example is Library of Congress project, Archive of Hispanic Literature on Tape. They don't have all of them online, but a lot of them are available in this way. We also include resources that are part of a larger project that include a distinctive, stable link to the content. For example, the World Digital Library has a distinctive URL for just the Latin American materials. So we include that. And finally, we include also resources from international organizations, government agencies, think tanks, that might not be just exclusively focusing on Latin America and the Caribbean, but might have good content for us. Something important that I would like to highlight is that we include resources that are free, but then they are not open access. Not everything free is open access. For example, there are a lot of data sets that require registration in order to download the data. So it's not open access because you need to require some registration, but the access to the content is free. That's something important to consider. That's why when we talk about the project, we don't tend to say it's open access so much. We focus more on the free because it's, for us, it's like a larger pool of resources. Regarding review process, we realize that if we establish a strict review process, like similar to a peer reviewed process for like journal articles, et cetera, it will be very slow. And remember, this was an emergency. There was an urgent need. So what we do is that we have a quality control team. We are right now 4 people. And what we do is that every resource that we get through the form is reviewed before it's made public. How is reviewed? Well, we have a set of guidelines. And these people in the quality control team, they have to go through it. But it's not like we meet, the 4 of us, to review every single resource. The process will be too slow. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Thank you. It's really helpful. I was wondering, you know, you mentioned the form, the web form for people to submit recommendations for additional resources. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, sort of what the volume has been like with, you know, engagement with the community to recommend additional resources. And I don't know whether you collect this or not, but what kinds of users are making suggestions? Are these students? Are they, if that is information that you gather, do you have a sense of, you know, either from where or sort of what type of recommender, you're seeing interest from?
Yeah, so we see it. I mean, it's basically the groups we target. Is students, faculty, and digital scholars. We don't get a lot of suggestions that way. I think most of the ones we get is through the people that are managing the project, the librarians that are part of LANE. The good thing about the form is that we allow people to submit recommendations that if they don't have a lot of time to fill out the form, we only ask them for title and URL. So that has allowed us to get more results. Because if they see a form with like 20 fields, like many people will just will not go with it. So we realized that when we started to implement this kind of short way of sharing sources that really work out. And I think the way that has been effective is like, and we will talk later about like the students had been involved in this project. For example, let's imagine a student is very interested in Cuba. So that student, we encourage them to, if you're interested in Cuba, please send us, include any resources you know about that. Or some are working on a particular assignment. And as they write the assignment, they find resources that, they tell me, well, Jesus, these resources might be good for Lagly. So in that way, I think through the students working in the project, we have been able to get new resources. And then a second aspect that has been interesting in terms of people collaborating is that as Lagly has been gaining more visibility, some people, when they see that their projects are included in Lagly, they might get back to us and tell us, well, the description you included about our project is outdated. Or I think you should improve the metadata included for our project. And of course, the best people that can describe metadata for a project is the creators themselves of the project. I was recently in a conference in Washington, D.C., and there was a project, one of the best about like political science for Latin America, that is created in Georgetown University. And the people that were in charge of the project, they approached me and they told me, well, you could improve basically your metadata for our project. And of course, quite the contrary, I don't see that as a criticism. I actually am grateful that people actually care to improve the project.
Yeah, that's great. The fact that, like you said, that it's gaining visibility and that you're getting buy-in by, the community of scholars. And that's amazing. Yeah, it'll be exciting to see how it expands and grows. So you spoke a little bit about your collaborators and, that the idea started with your colleague at New York Public Library. Could you speak a little bit and, understanding that the effort was started during the height of the COVID pandemic when, everybody was distributed and everything was sort of done virtually. Could you talk a little bit about what it was like to work with your colleagues, how you found collaborators, how that's expanded and maybe shifted as things have gone back to, it's still a lot of work is done virtually, but I guess if you could speak a little bit about the collaboration at the heart of the project.
So internationally, basically, how did we find collaborators? Basically, it was through our librarian networks that we found. We actually started in October 2020. The library at the Colegio de México. The Colegio de México is one of the most important research institutions in Mexico. They became a collaborating institution. We were trying to find also a collaborator for Brazil because we wanted to include Spanish, Portuguese, and English. Our project is in both. If you go to our website, which by the way is lagly.info, you can actually all the website is in the three languages. So thanks to our collaborators in Mexico, they recommended us a collaborator in Brazil. So that really worked very well. And our collaborator from Brazil is the Fundação Getúlio Vargas. And they joined in April 2022. And it has been a great contribution. Why? Because, they have expanded our multilingual access in these three languages. They also contributed with great ideas. For example, in the beginning, we didn't have a control vocabulary for Sapi Access. They recommended the control vocabulary developed by HAPI. HAPI is the Hispanic American Periodical Index. It's a database created in California, and they already had developed a control vocabulary in English, Portuguese, and Spanish. We reached out to them, and they actually allow us to use their control vocabulary. So again, we always try to avoid reinventing the wheel. If it's something already done, we go with it. So that international experience, international collaboration, it has been working great. We put together a grant, we got it. So, we always have new ideas and future developments. In terms of the people that work permanently in the project and the students, interestingly, the only people that are paid in this project are the students. We pay the students through grants, but the permanent people working in the project, we're not paid. So we have an executive team. I am the principal coordinator. I'm here at the University of Albany. We have Kate Kellett is our metadata coordinator. She's a cataloger from Yale Law Library and UAlbany alumni. And we have Eric Silberber, and he's our web coordinator from Queen's College in CUNY. And then later on, I'm happy to give you more details about the technicalities about how implemented this project, because some people actually might be inspired by the project and develop their own. And we have everything available in GitHub. So we can talk a little bit later more about that. And then we have a coordinator in Mexico, a coordinator in Brazil, and they coordinate also the students working there. And as I said, I mean, all the librarians working, contributing, for example, in the quality control team, et cetera, they do that all that for free. And then regarding students, we have had 4 from UAlbany, 2 from the history program, and that those were funded by the history department itself. That was great because here in UAlbany, one of the priorities we have now is providing experiential learning opportunities. So that's really valued by the university. And that's why the history department decided to fund for 2 positions for the students. But in the same token, also LACS, the Latin American Studies Department, funded 1. And then through one grant, we were able to fund 1 position for a student from the Spanish program. It was thanks to an award, the Salam Award for Institutional Collaboration Initiatives. I was very happy that I was able to provide experiential learning opportunities to students in the 3 academic departments that I serve as a Savvy Librarian: History, Languages, and Latin American Studies. And then thanks to the award that I just mentioned, we were able to find a position for a student in Mexico and a student in Brazil. And then over the years, we had students from other US universities, like, for example, Princeton, Duke, and UPenn.
That's amazing. Yeah. And the fact that you were able to build that connection with your departments as well is, yeah, that's great. You mentioned the website a little bit, and I was wondering if you could talk about, so I know the project started out as a Google Sheet, and now it has a formal web presence. Could you talk a little bit about, do you work with a developer on the project? You mentioned that you shared the codes on GitHub. If you could talk a little bit about that, that would be great. Thank you.
So our web coordinator, Eric Silberber, what he did was he designed a web app to display and search through Lackly resources in our Google Sheet. And his script and all his coding is available in GitHub. So, I mean, if you Google GitHub, Lackly, I mean, you will find it right away. Basically, if you want to replicate our design for other projects, you're more than willing to do that. We were actually approached by other communities that were focusing around one topic. There was one, it was around theology. And they approached us because they wanted to create something similar. In terms of languages we use, from a technological point of view, 46% of the project is done with JavaScript, 43% is done with HTML, and 10% is with CSS, with cascading sheets. And basically the way it works is that the site retrieves the full data from the Google Sheet. So what you're searching in our website, Lackly.info, what is happening is that you're calling all our the full data of the Google Sheet. And then the searching is performed on the client side. Basically, it's that the user's web browser using JavaScript is where actually you're bringing all the data. So it's not a server-side application. It's a client side. You're bringing the data. And then, so that's why when you search in the beginning, the first search is very slow because you're bringing all the data. Once you perform a second search, it's already in your browser and is really very quick. In the future, we might go with a more like server-side application. In that case, we might have to implement more like a database instead of a Google Sheet. So that might happen in the future. But so far, I mean, it has been the good thing about using this technology is that very like is low technology applications, very easy to implement. We didn't have to invest on any kind of server space or anything like that. In the future, I mean, if an institution allows us to use a server, we might go with that. But I mean, I think this technology has been working great. And then any updates happen in the Google Sheet. And then when you're searching, it happens automatically also in when you're doing the search. So nothing special is required. So that's basically, I don't know if you have any questions about technology, Emily, but that's the basics.
No, that's awesome. Thank you. Yeah, we went, I don't know if we need to do a deep dive on the tech, but that's great that it's on GitHub and available for folks. I'm actually thinking about another project that might work really well for. So you spoke about that this is really a volunteer effort, you know, except for the student workers that you have. And you also mentioned getting grant funding. I was wondering if you could talk about the sustainability of the effort. You know, oftentimes I think about that, like there's, you know, these rich, robust resources that are sort of passion projects, and how do they maintain over time and sustain over time? And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how that's built into the project and sort of how you're thinking about that as the principal coordinator.
Yeah, great question. Because it's easy to start, right? Like a startup project is always easy, but maintain it, it requires some thought and resources. At least at the short and medium term, the project is sustainable. We want to make sure that the project remains as an open access community-based project. And right now, I mean, it's managed by Elaine. We don't know what will happen in the future, but this is an organization that has been, I mean, it started in the 90s, and I mean, we continue to exist. So at least, I mean, that brings some stability. We hope to keep getting grants and support for libraries. Right now, for example, and going just a little bit back to the technology, like I acquired the domain, luckily the info, and I bought it through Namecheap. It's company that sells domains, and I got it for 5 years and I paid $75. So I mean, it wasn't too expensive, but maybe in the future this could be paid by a consortium of libraries or in other different ways. If we think about the long term, that might be harder to predict. I mean, in the world that we live in, so short and medium I think is sustainable. Long term, the way I look at it is that I think it should be supported maybe by a larger group of professional organizations. And one of the things we were looking at is maybe it can become a decentralized project where in every Latin American country, there is like a unit we meet together and make decisions. So that might be a way to go in the long term. So I think it will work through like a network of international partners within a decentralized model.
It's always interesting too to think about governance then associated with that, and you know, how to sort of, what are the expectations and obligations and everything inherent with that. But like you said, that's longer term. You're good for the near term, so that's good. Yeah. You've mentioned a couple times sort of, you know, vision for the future, and you mentioned, you know, improving the metadata or continuing to add resources or that sort of thing. Could you maybe share a little bit more about your plans for expansion and refining the collection and ways that libraries or others could get involved?
So, of course, we want to keep expanding our content in the three official languages of the project, English, Spanish, and Portuguese. We want to include in the future, and this is part of our plan, our country coverage. Right now, the best represented countries are Brazil, Cuba, and Mexico. But we will need, I think there are some countries that are underrepresented in the project. We want to make an effort to include more content from them. I'm talking about some countries from the Andes and from Central America. We need a better coverage for them. We also want to create some sort of pedagogical resources to support teaching and learning. So different ways that faculty can use the content. For example, like we have, I believe, the most comprehensive place to find content related to slavery in Latin America. So it will be great. I mean, you can type in slavery and you get all the results, but I think putting them in context for a pedagogical use, I think that will be great. We would like to reach out to various specialized communities to promote Blackly, for example, the Latin American Studies Association, the Conference on Latin American History, the Caribbean Studies Association, and other professional organizations at the national and international level. We're thinking about applying to, and I touched on this a little bit before, we want to apply more to more grants and more awards. So one that is on my radar, I'm not applying this year, but next year, is the Diversity Transformation Award. It's one here at the local level, I mean, provided by UAlbany, and with experiential learning in mind. So we want to continue that. We have noticed that students have valued experience, so we want to keep providing that. And then another of our plans is to provide to improving our searching capabilities by exploring options for advanced search, filtering. Right now, the search we have is very basic. And then, of course, we want to deepen our international collaboration. So right now, we have collaborators from Mexico and Brazil, so we would like to open that up. So as you can see, Emily, we have a lot of ideas, sometimes not enough hands, but I don't have, we have a shortage of ideas for the future.
Keep your eyes out and see how things evolve. So I was wondering if you could talk a little, and you spoke about this earlier, you know, the idea that this is a community created and supported project. Could you talk a little bit about the benefits of that, but as well, maybe some of the challenges, and if, you know, whether you have any advice for scholars that are interested in tackling a similar effort, you know, any sort of lessons learned that you think might be helpful for folks generally?
So benefits, again, and this is a major one, do not reinvent the wheel. Like, for example, like there are already projects that include current journals, meaning journals that are active. So if that has been done by other people, why spend time and resources in Lagly to do that? So we only include journals that are like have ceased and are digitally available because there is no list for those. But for current ones, there are already excellent lists. So we don't focus on that. So we constantly see if someone has done some of our ideas and it has been done, we don't reinvent the wheel. That's a benefit. It benefits everyone. Then another benefit is that if you work in a community, you're sharing knowledge. Like everyone is bringing new knowledge, different knowledge of resources or ways of doing things. So, I mean, that's a major benefit. Also, when you work together, you can achieve more and you can go deeper in the project. Then when you work in collaboration, you're also bringing more skills into the project. Technical skills, language skills, you name it. And you're also bringing people with various different points of view to find different solutions in different aspects. So, I mean, that's also a benefit. Challenges, I think one of the major challenges is that, I mean, every time you have to make decisions and go through different steps, basically that makes the project not as fast, right? But it's worth in the long run. But of course, I mean, every time you work in a collaboration, I mean, that's a given, right? And in terms of advice, I mean, my major advice will be like, make sure you create a team that brings various skills to the table. Like, for example, I mean, as I mentioned before, we have a metadata expert, a tech expert, people with Portuguese skills, Spanish skills. So that's important. Communication is essential. Make sure that everyone is on the same page. And also foster a community spirit that people are excited about the project and they keep the excitement, not just when a project is launched. And value the work of every single person that participates in the project. And something very important along with that is to provide opportunities for the people that work in the project so that they can grow and develop ideas. For example, like in Colegio de Mexico, they thought that it could be a good idea to make sure that we web archive the resources in Lagly, so maybe someone there will start their project. So not every project has to start by the executive team. Of course, to coordinate better, and again, don't reinvent the wheel and all that, we want to know about different initiatives, but because our data can be reused, right, under Creative Commons, so everyone can come up with different ideas. So we really foster that.
So that brings us to the end of the questions. I guess just one last sort of fun one is, do you have a favorite resource in Lagly? Is there something that you particularly are pleased that you've been able to surface?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there are a lot of them that I like. But one thing that I would like to highlight is that, I mean, with our goal in mind of providing visibility to resources created in Latin America, I would like to highlight like two of them. One is Redalic. Redalic is the network of scientific journals from Latin America and the Caribbean, Spain and Portugal, and also Cielo. You might know that one, Emily. Is the scientific electronic library online studied in Brazil. Those are two efforts that have been able to bring like these peer-reviewed journals, give them more visibility, because as we know, I mean, projects like Web of Science and et cetera, sometimes when you're trying to find like citations or high quality journals, these journals from the Global South are not included in these Global North conglomerates and databases. So I think I really like those. And then, but there are a lot of them that I like. And one thing that I don't want to forget, Emily, if you allow me, is that we thought that Lagly was going to be a great resource from the beginning to build news materials, new projects under the Creative Commons license. But then we realized that it's an excellent project to support reference and resource assistance. So instead of giving you a list of resources that I like, let me share with you a few questions that you can actually be able to help as a reference librarian, thanks to Lagly. For example, you can help answering questions like, where can I find the most comprehensive set of free resources on slavery? I mean, and I mentioned that before. Where can I find photographs about Cuba in the 50s? Where can I find freely available online encyclopedias, dictionaries to support my reference work? Where can I find websites including oral histories? Where can I find ephemeral materials focusing on the Caribbean? So, I mean, there are a lot of questions that you can answer thanks to Lagly. So I encourage reference librarians to use Lagly. One thing that I wouldn't like to forget, Emily, if you allow me, is that to give some numbers about our project, we use actually Google Analytics to look at our data. And right now, Lagly is accessed from over 50 countries around the world, which is great. As of today, Lagly includes 1,200 resources. We are now evaluating closer to 400, over 150 libguides linked to Lagly. And since Lagly's inception, we have had more than 40 collaborators.
That's amazing. Yeah. No, the stats, you got to get the stats in there. That's great. That's amazing, though. And again, that, you know, quickly becoming an essential resource for, you know, for this domain. So it's congratulations. It's an amazing effort. I'm so pleased to have learned more about it with you today.
So yeah, this has been a great conversation. Thank you for both coming.
I just would like to add one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
And you asked me this question, Emily, but I forgot to mention, is that how can you get involved?
Yeah.
Yes, that was actually going to be my question. How can they get people involved if they're interested? How do they contact you all?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, you can get involved in different ways. If you want to nominate a source, and again, you only have maybe a few seconds to share a source, you only need to go to lagly.info, click on contribute. In our navigation bar, it says contribute, and then send us title URL. That will be the minimum, like, kind of involvement. If you want to get involved more, you can fill out the whole form. And then one thing that, then if you have any suggestions, ideas, or anything you would like to report, our email is lagliproject@gmail.com. And one thing that I don't want to forget saying is that as we go through our daily digital lives, like we go to social media, websites, et cetera, we all encounter resources. And the only way to create a great repository is if everyone collaborates. So if you're in Twitter, for example, and find a great source that you think it will be good for Lagly, please don't hesitate to, at that moment, send it to us. Because how many times we find something in social media, but if we don't store that material, that information, we forget.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So don't forget about Lagly and just say, this is great for Lagly. Send us title and URL and we will appreciate that.
I am like really looking forward to the opportunity to use this in a reference interaction. So I hope that moment comes soon. I'm going to be looking for all those questions coming my way. All right. So one of the ways we like to end this show is by asking our guests what they've been reading lately, whether for pleasure or for research. Emily, let's start with you.
Yeah, I am reading actually like a physical book, We the Animals by Justin Torres, and really enjoying it.
Awesome. And how about you, Jesus?
Yeah, I'm reading a book of short stories by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. I don't know, you know that one. And also I'm reading a book of essays from Cuba about like the current situation in Cuba. And it's written by a journalist there, a freelance journalist. It's called La Isla Oculta.
Awesome. I am currently reading the highly anticipated sequel to Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros, Iron Flame, that came out last week and is going very well. So thank you both again for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. To all our Librarians with Lattes listeners out there, thank you for sticking with us. As always, I'm Amanda Lau. I'll catch you next time. And if you haven't been to the libraries lately, what are you waiting for? We hope to see you soon.